Welcome, everyone, to DEI After 5, the show that focuses on topics across diversity, equity, and inclusion with some of the brightest minds in the industry. Here's your hostess, inclusive culture curator and coach, Sasha Thompson. Hey, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of DEI After 5. You know, there's been so much going on in the world around us, particularly around what is happening in the diversity, equity, and inclusion industry. And so I wanted to spend this episode really talking about kind of what this looks like moving forward. What are some of the impacts? What are some of the things that organizations or even individuals that are concerned about what's happening, what can be done? And so my guest today is Ben Green, who is a transgender supporter and those in the non-binary, those in the LGBTQ plus community supporter and consultant, and really wanting to unpack this as it particularly impacts those that are part of the LGBTQ plus community. So Ben, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me. Great to be here.
Thank you. So I just kind of warbled your intro, but if you could, you know, tell folks who may not know who you are, a little bit about you and how you got into this work.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Ben Green. I use he, him pronouns. I am an openly transgender man and public speaker. I came out when I was 15 years old in small town Connecticut, and nobody in my town had really come out as publicly as I had. And there were so few resources that existed to support me. And it felt like I had to build support systems as I realized I needed them. So I kind of say I was jumping out of a plane with a tarp and a sewing kit. And so as an adult, I have made my career being the parachute factory. I get to go to companies, governments, families, schools, and build those supportive systems so that everybody gets to be supported by default rather than needing to build their own systems as they need them. So I love that work. I do a lot of advocacy work. I live in Missouri and I'm transgender, so I'm political against my will. And I wrote a book for parents of trans kids called My Child is Trans, Now What? So I love building diversity, equity, and inclusion in every space I can get my hands on.
Oh my gosh, there's so much of what you said that I'm just like, yes, I love that. I love that. And that the analogy of kind of like the tarp and the sewing kit, is I think there are so many people that are in the same, I was going to say boat, but that doesn't fit the analogy. But you know, like in kind of that same space of really trying to like build as you're doing and learning and figuring out all of the things while in the motion, right? And so I appreciate the work that you do and all of the resources that you provide. And so Ben, I really wanted to have this conversation about, you know, there's just so much happening right now. You know, I was looking back at some past episodes and about a year ago, about a year ago, I was having conversations about this anti-DEI legislation that was taking place specifically at that point in higher education. But we're now starting to see that it's moving beyond higher education. It's moving into corporate spaces. It's moving into the government. And so what are some of the challenges that you are seeing right now as more and more states are starting to kind of tack on to this anti-DEI train?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenges I'm seeing, I'm going to break it out into two camps. The first is that there are a lot of people who never wanted to be doing DEI who now have permission to stop. And I think that's the group of people who really started in 2020 and have just been waiting for this kind of fad to end, which it's not a fad and it's not going to end. And there were a lot of people who wanted to feel like they didn't have to do that anymore. And so I think as soon as there's even a whiff of something legal, of something government, they're like, okay, great. I can now reasonably say that, you know, the risk, it was too much to do this anymore. So I think a lot of people got permission to stop caring as if they had really cared in the first place about diversity, equity, and inclusion. I live in Missouri and we have bills really specifically targeting diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, talking about letting people use the right bathroom at work, talking about ESG funds that companies might have. It's definitely a lot of roadblocks in place that there have always been roadblocks, but just more and more keep getting added on.
Yeah. So you touched on these two groups. And the one that I think, you know, we have always had to struggle with, and I don't think has ever gone away, is the group that just never wanted DEI to happen. Right. And so when I look at the history of this work, and for so many people, they're like, oh, DEI just started, you know, in 2020, 2018, 2019. I'm like, no, when you think about what the civil rights movement was in the 1960s, that was DEI work. Right. It just wasn't called DEI work. But then you think about some of the opposers to civil rights. When you think about, you know, everyone, especially, I'll say this way. There's so many people now that have Martin Luther King Jr. on a pedestal, right? For good and bad reasons. But when you think about when he was murdered, because that's what happened, he was one of the most hated people in the country because of what he was trying to accomplish and trying to do, right? So when I think about this group of people that just don't want this to happen, I put them in that category of, you know, you speak about Dr. King now, but you would have been in that group that would have been happy that he was assassinated, right? Back in the 1960s. Well, murdered, because that's what happened. So you have this group, and to your point, you know, now it's like, okay, now the government's getting involved. Now there's legislation behind this. I don't have to do this. Yes, that is happening and taking place, but, and this is really a two-part question. One, is there any way to shift the mindset of that group? Because again, same group, fast forward to now, they're like, oh, you know, well, what MLK said and what MLK did and put him on this pedestal, even though they're twisting his words and who he was as a person. But is there any hope in shifting or changing mindsets for that group?
There's so much we have to learn right now, even if we're talking about corporate America and our battlegrounds are on Slack channels. Like, it's a lot of the same attitudes are very present, as much as people would like to say that, you know, we had the civil rights movement and MLK, the version of MLK that just was like, please, nonviolence. I just like what the fake version of MLK that everyone put on their company's Instagram, you know, on MLK Day. And so I think it is a good question. And this is something that I think about a lot in my work in trans advocacy, because it is such a polar topic. And I think DEI is very similar. And I think it's polar on the exact same lines. The people who don't like me don't like DEI either. And there are a lot of times where I kind of have to figure out, all right, you know, I live in Missouri. I travel to rural areas to speak. Is this a safe environment? Am I going to be able to get through to these people? And I think there are so many times I have been really surprised by who I'm able to get through to, but that requires having a different conversation than people are expecting. And I think that's something that, you know, we've kind of gotten this into this habit of like, there's like a conversation about DEI that you will have with someone who's anti-DEI. And it feels really tempting to just press play and like have the same fight that we've been having over and over again. And then nobody's really listening. Nobody's really learning. And so I've really had to relearn, like, how do I talk to people who don't like me, who don't like what I'm doing, and how do I change their minds? Sometimes that's possible, sometimes that isn't. And when people can't be changed, power and platform can. And so that's something I'm really mindful of like, at some point, there maybe like, maybe someone's mind can't be changed and maybe there needs to be a different route to take to say, okay, I'm not going to work for this company anymore. I'm not going to, you know, celebrate this individual, whatever it might be. But I think that's something I'm really mindful of, is I think it's possible. I think it requires having different kinds of conversations than a lot of us are used to. But it is really challenging.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, like, so what is the message that tends to resonate, right? Like, if you are, and I don't want to even say changing minds, it's okay. I didn't think of it from that perspective, right? Like, yes. So you're not totally changing the mind, but you're at least opening up the mind a bit more. And so what's some of the messaging that you really feel like, okay, this kind of pushes that door open?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I've had to realize is that we're not fighting a war on the battleground effects. We're not going to be able to outlogic someone. We're not going to point out a hole in their argument because they don't care. That's not what this is about. For so many people, there's folks who are spreading misinformation, and then there are just people who have received a profound amount of misinformation that is meant to be very emotionally activating. It's meant to be very threatening. It's meant to be very, they're coming for you, they're trying to hurt you. So when I approach, you know, conversations with people, whether it's about DEI overall or trans inclusion specifically, I focus on, you know, change the heart and the mind will follow. When I'm able to make that connection, then people might be open to hearing a little bit more about, you know, some facts or some studies or statistics. But I found the biggest message that resonates is just getting people to detach from the misinformation, have a conversation they're not expecting, and connect to them on an emotional level, which requires so much more energy, so much more effort. That is such a challenging thing to do. And that's where the impact is.
Yeah. Like what I'm hearing you say is like you're really connecting them to the humanity, right? Because it's so easy to dismiss someone or, you know, they're going to cause me harm if you don't even know who they are or if you can't put a face or a name to that. And then when they are countered with someone who is they and it does not fit that stereotype or what they thought in their mind, right? There's that cognitive dissonance that takes place and starts to happen. And so I'm really hearing it's about connecting not just head and heart, but the humanity of it. And, you know, one of the things that I've often talked about and I hear people talk about is it's harder to say no to someone when you have a connection, right, with them, because you don't want to hurt anybody's feeling. Like human nature is about if you want to be helpful, you want to make that connection. And so as I'm listening to you, it really is getting in touch with the humanity of this. And that's what I hear so often, especially now we forgot that we are human beings and we're dealing with human beings and human lives. And everybody just wants to live in a way that honors them, who they are, regardless of who they are. Yeah. Right. And you can't espouse your beliefs on someone else because those are your beliefs. Right. And so kind of unpacking all of that. Excuse me. The other group that you talked about earlier was the practitioners that are burning out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been in that space when I kind of started this business. I was very cognizant of the impacts that burnout had on me in doing this and how I was showing up. And so I was very intentional of how I was going to incorporate self-care into my practice. And so as we're seeing this anti-DEI legislation pop up, you have, and I again, say two different groups, but you have the practitioners that have been and lived in doing this work and know that this is just another chink in the armor. Right. We're going to continue to be on this battlefield. But then I also feel there's this group that is semi brand new to this. Right. They kind of came up when everyone else was like, oh, I'm a DEI practitioner. They're like, yeah, me too. Hadn't done a lot of internal work on themselves. And so they're seeing this and, oh, this is a battle. Like, we have to give up. Right. And so, as someone who is part of the trans community, you are living and breathing this work, right? How do you, and I'm not going to ask my question that I always ask at the end about, you know, how do you fill your cup and take care of yourself? We'll get to that later. But, you know, what are some of the things that can be said, or how do you encourage other folks that are in this space to continue to push forward?
For the people who are burned out, who are tired, who are feeling kind of, you know, hopeless or lost, I hear you. I get that. I think one of the biggest things I remind myself of, first and foremost, is that especially in corporate DEI and the way that we have DEI departments of one, almost exclusively, it's a team of one, we send a lot of messages that one person should be enough to fix it, but we are fighting against a hundreds of years old system that was It was never meant to be fixable by one person, which means that nothing that one person could ever do will be enough. And trying to let go of this idea of being able to do enough, you'll never be able to do enough, which also means that everything that you can do is enough because that's all you can do. Mm-hmm. And that's been really helpful for me to remember, is that like, I'm not gonna fix it. And that's okay because I'm doing everything I can. And I think getting involved, the more involved I have gotten in this fight, especially, you know, in politics, I go to the Missouri State House whenever I can for the hearings. And that has filled me with so much hope, because mm-hmm. the reporting that we see, it's meant to be bad news, because statistically, you're more likely to read an article for every negative word in a headline. You're more likely to click and read the article. The worse you feel, the more likely you are to keep scrolling on LinkedIn, to stay on an app, to engage with a post. You'll leave a comment more if you're angry than if you're happy. So we are shown more bad news. And I gotta say, when I go and get involved, it's simultaneously worse and better than you could imagine, in that there's a lot of hate in those rooms, a lot of things that people are saying that will haunt me for the rest of my days. And the number of people who show up in support of those bills versus against those bills, mm-hmm. we pack the halls, hundreds of people with 24 hours notice. That's a 3.5 hour drive to the Capitol. And we pack those rooms every time. And they'll have maybe 5, maybe 6 or 7 people total there to support those bills. And that fills me with a lot of hope to really know what's going on and to have room to hear the good news and not just be, you know, only looking at the bad news. So getting involved and finding my community, remembering that not only am I not supposed to fix this by myself, I can't, and I'm not fixing it by myself. There are so many people. So finding and connecting with my community and seeing the other people who are in this fight has been really kind of healing.
You said one of my favorite words, community, right? Like, it's so important to, especially if you are the lonely only, to find your connections, to find your community, to feel as if you are not in this alone. And I love what you said about, you know, do what one person can do. Yeah. And I think, you know, part of that in finding your community is also engaging other people that may feel like, well, that's not my job, but there's something else that I can do. And if you start connecting those dots and start connecting those puzzle pieces, yeah. then more and more people are doing what they can do from their position of power, right, to expand that. And it feels less daunting. It feels like there's collective unity, and you can take a breath. Because I think that's the other part of this, that burnout is so many people like, I can't stop because I'm the only one doing it, right? But when you have that connect, that community in place, it's like, okay, I can take a breath, but somebody else is going to continue doing this work, and it's going to continue to move forward. And so I appreciate that sentiment so much, because so many people forget that community is what is going to continue to keep this work moving forward, right? Regardless of legislation, we'll go underground if we need to continue to do this work. So I appreciate that. The other thing that I think that you mentioned that I don't feel a lot of, well, I'll say it this way. We're so focused on, and you know, I'm part of it too, because a lot of my work is in that corporate space. But you mentioned being part of what's happening in legislation, being a part and having a voice and being an advocate in those spaces. And so talk to us a little bit about, you know, the connection between those two and the level of empowerment that comes along with that as well.
Yeah, it has been so empowering to feel like I'm really part of fighting against these bills, and they are directly impacting the workforce. We have an internal refugee crisis in the United States. There are mm-hmm. hundreds of thousands of families, parents of individuals who have left their home states, have left their jobs because it is not safe for them to live where they live. They cannot access the medical care they need. In some states, they are being persecuted for child abuse for supporting their children. In Texas, any parent of a transgender child was investigated for child abuse. In Florida, they are continuing to bring on more and more horrifying laws. Just today, they made it illegal to change your driver's license, and they are suggesting that it's punishable by jail time if you have had your driver's license changed, because that's fraud. Heavy air quotes. So people are leaving. I don't get to leave that behind when I show up at work, whether it's an in-person office, whether it's a remote job. I don't get to not be political for, you know, 8 or 9 hours a day while I'm working. That's all the time. That's my life. And so
your existence is political. Yeah,
exactly. I don't have a choice. And so many people are left without that choice. And those bills continue to attack more than just transgender and LGBTQ plus people. They continue to impact so many individuals. And it is really challenging, and, you know, definitely impacting the workforce more than people think.
Yeah. And I think that's so important that you point that out, because when this legislation happens or takes place, right, people are leaving states, people are leaving their homes in order to find refuge in another state, in another location that will be more open to receiving them for who they are. Right. Like, and that's what's frustrating with this, is people just want to be who they are. And you're telling me that I can't do that. Right. And I get so agitated with a lot of things that I see. And, you know, when Roe v. Wade was, you know, overturned, I was asked to, you know, I spoke on a couple of different shows, and the question kept coming up, you know, all these organizations, all these corporations are coming up with, you know, birth control for women. And I'm like, well, what about birth control for men?
Yes.
Like, are we not thinking about the other side of this, and how this is what equity looks like? And so when I'm thinking about organizations that have remote employees, or they have offices in other locations, they're not free of whatever is happening, because headquarters is in California. Yes. Or headquarters is in a state that is much more liberal, right? They have to think of the impact of, okay, how is this legislation going to impact or hinder our employees? And one, and two, is this, how are we going to protect them? Right. And I think that there's quite a few, and I've heard quite a few organizations that think about it, but they're like, oh, well, we need to think about this from a benefit standpoint. And I'm like, no, this is from a human capital perspective, right? This is your talent. These are the people that said, yes, I want to work for this organization for some reason or the other. And at the same time, they're looking for that reciprocity in feeling like I can work here and be okay, and my company is not going to just throw me out to the wolves. Yeah. Because they don't want to deal with the politics of this.
Yeah, that is something that I definitely see. And a lot of companies too are so afraid to touch this, because they're like, well, we want to respect different beliefs. You know, if you believe that you're trans and someone else believes that they would like to be disrespectful and call you the wrong pronouns, who are we to say who's right? Huh. A lot of companies are taking that stance, and that's, your employees need to see you taking a strong stance for inclusion. And you don't have to tell people what they can believe, but at a workplace, you do get to tell people how they should behave. And that does include, you know, using the right pronouns for someone, which would not be acceptable to debate about any other employee who's not transgender. If I had a male coworker who just had longer hair and I started calling him she, you know, I'm getting in trouble for that right away. There's no questions asked. So it's interesting when it comes to trans folks that it's like, well, I don't know. What if it's against someone's religious beliefs? We can't come against that. And
but that's their religious beliefs on them. Like, that has nothing. Oh, sorry. That's like, yeah. And what I'm hearing also is that ties to company culture. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I talk a lot about company culture, and it's what people experience. It's not what's written on the cafeteria wall.
Yeah.
And every single day, what people experience, if they're getting those microaggressions, if they're being misgendered, if, you know, they're getting the snide remarks, that is the company culture, because that's what you allow to be the company culture. But to your point, if an organization says that we believe in inclusivity and everyone should feel valued and seen and heard, there are certain behaviors that come along with that.
Yeah.
Exactly. And we hold people accountable when they do not live up to our values as an organization. And the part that I think you're, you know, talking about is that lack of accountability in holding people accountable after this is what we've said who we are. Then how do we ensure that everyone lives up to that?
Yeah. Diversity, equity, and inclusion needs to be a part of promotion criteria, needs to be a part of performance reviews. I go into a company and I hear somebody say, oh, well, you know, that senior leader, that's just Rick. Rick doesn't listen to women, or like whatever it is. There's always at least one. And everyone's like, but he's so good at what he does. And there are women too who fall in that role, but it's a lot of men. And it's a lot of people who say, well, he's great at what he does. So we can't say anything.
My guy was
might be worse at what they do because of Rick. So, you know, canceling out a little bit.
Mine was Bob. And Bob cussed out the founder of the organization. Ooh. And I was like, that's your company culture. That's the company culture, regardless of what you say, because that's what was allowed to happen.
Yeah.
Okay, Ben, we could go on for days and days on this, because I think there's just so much and there's so much more we can do when it comes to what's happening legally, right, in our states and in our local areas, that I don't think people are making that connection necessarily between how they can impact what's happening. You know, elections are coming up. Those are the times to make those choices and those decisions. And it's local, state, and not just the presidential, right? It's those day-to-day things that I think are so important. Okay, so my last question, I'm gonna go back to what I said earlier. So what are the things that you do to fill your cup? Like, what do you do to take care of yourself? Because this stuff can stress you the hell out. This is...
Oh yeah, it does. All the time. I think being around people who are fighting the same fight as me, and like, that doesn't just mean other trans folks. And like, you mentioned Roe v. Wade getting overturned, and like, that's my fight. Racial justice is my fight. Disability inclusion is my fight. Like, we're fighting against the same systems, against the same people, against people using the same reasons against all of us. So I want to be around my people who are fighting in this fight with me. A, just spending time laughing, being joyful, existing, being in community with each other. Not just hanging out, but saying, can I feed you? Can I take care of you? Really showing up with that kind of radical love that we have for each other. And then also, all of this is what fills my cup. For anyone who's listening on a podcast, I have a bookshelf behind me that is far more elaborate than it needs to be. But I love science fiction and fantasy that features LGBTQ characters. I love to know that transgender people can also get lost in space and have mishaps and, you know, and fall in love and whatever it is. It's nice to see people like me living in, you know, exciting fantasy worlds. And so I like to read a lot of books that just let me escape, but I'm not trying to escape my identity. I'm just trying to escape, you know, hateful people. So I like to get to bring my story along with me when I read.
Love that. Yeah, my vice is murder mysteries.
Very nice.
I love, especially if they're, you know, people from underrepresented communities that are the heroine and so, or hero. And yeah, I love those things. So Ben, thank you so much for being part of this conversation, at least starting this conversation with our community, because it's one we have not had. And I think it's so important for us to be able to connect the dots on what we as practitioners are dealing with every single day and kind of the socio-political pieces of how it not just impacts what's happening within our organizations, but how it impacts employees and the ability for us to be able to do a little bit more, right, in controlling or at least being able to have a say in legislation. So thank you so much. If people wanted to get in contact with you, how could they do that?
Yeah, absolutely. My website is www.bgtranstalks.com. If you want to look up my book, it's My Child is Trans, Now What? It's getting published this May. If you need any support for your family, for your workplace, I do a lot of free family support, and I spend a lot of time working paid for corporations doing just inclusion consulting, public speaking, however I can support you or lift you up, or if you want to get more involved in advocacy, go to my website, shoot me an email. I would love to talk to you.
Ben, thank you so much. And thank you all for tuning in to this week's episode of DEI After Five. I hope that you were able to walk away with a little bit more information than you came in with about how you can kind of take your efforts to the next level. You can find us here every Tuesday at 5:15 p.m. on YouTube or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, be able to be sure to like, subscribe, and share this with your colleagues and friends so that everyone has access to this information. And until next time, have a good one.